So while I was in London, I had several colleagues come and visit from the United States, my peer review group. And one of those was Don Southworth, who was here a couple weeks ago for our Building Sanctuary dedication. He is the executive director of the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association. And he decided to stay a few days after. We figured we'd go to Liverpool and check out the Beatles sites and also have dinner with another Unitarian minister in England named Jane. I had met Jane at a retreat in September, very much liked her instantly. She did a Vesper service that her voice just drew me into. But I didn't really have much of a chance to talk to her, and there were rumblings in the air that she was struggling with cancer. My friend Don had met her on a few other occasions, and they had really hit it off, so he arranged for us to have dinner. And so we went to this wonderful dinner in Liverpool. Jane had just returned to work after a latest round with cancer. And Jane really was one of several inspiring British Unitarian ministers who somehow managed to keep their church moving forward in spite of really tiny numbers and just the tidal wave of secularism in England. I felt a deep connection to her from just these few hours we had dinner together. And there was just a note of anxiety over the meal as she shared a little bit about having a few new unexplained lumps and just generally not feeling very good. After getting a pint of ale at a nearby pub, we said goodbye to Jane and she got in a cab, headed to the train station and back to her house. That would be the last time I ever saw Jane. Shortly after returning to the United States, about a month later, I learned that Jane had a recurrence of cancer and that it was hopeless. She moved home with her parents. She went into hospice care and died just a few days ago. And even though I'm in this line of work where it's conceivable to do 3 memorial services in 3 days, at least a lot of the time I still live in some sort of denial of death. And even though cancer loomed large over our conversation with Jane, it's just shocking to me that a mere 4 months later, she's gone. I'm really struggling to wrap my heart around that. The truth is that we human beings are incredibly vulnerable. It's not just babies who are soft. We all are. 4 months from now, any one of us in this room may have gone into hospice care and died by July. And that doesn't even account for sudden accidents that strike out of the blue, like happened this past week, that touched our fellowship. I've talked here before about the Unitarian Universalist minister Forrest Church's idea, image, that there is a trap door beneath each one of us. And one day, the trap door opens, whoosh, we're gone. Really, is there anything else you need to know about how vulnerable we are as human beings? So then a basic spiritual question is, how are we going to deal with this fact of our vulnerability? Are we going to express it, or are we going to wall it off? In a sermon I gave last year on vulnerability, I made the case for expressing it rather than walling it off. And today, I want to temper that sentiment by saying that at the same time, we also need to develop that small streak of steel within us. I'm not sure that most of us would be able to survive without that steel within us. Maybe a few Buddhists who are really far along in the meditation thing, but I don't think most of us. The need for a strong streak of steel within is even more important if we are part of a population labeled as vulnerable. People of color, for example, or the poor, or people who are not in the majority in terms of gender identity or sexual identity, just to cite a few examples. As a straight, relatively affluent white male in the United States, I am emphatically not in one of these vulnerable categories. This is the nature of my white, straight, affluent, American male privilege. I generally do not have to worry about, am I going to get my next meal? Or is there going to be a roof overhead tonight? Or is my partner going to assault me? Or might I be beat up because someone thinks I'm gay, or shot because I'm wearing a hoodie or listening to loud music? A few weeks ago, I saw the movie 12 Years a Slave, which is, as a lot of us know, a true story about an African-American New Yorker who in 1841 was kidnapped and sold into slavery. One day Solomon Northup was free, and the next day he was on a boat headed to New Orleans to be sold into bondage. As his years in bondage stretch on in the movie, you can see Solomon develop that streak of steel within. You can see him, in the language of the reading, encapsulate himself, harden himself. This is what he has to do in order to survive this unbelievable ordeal. In recent years, we Unitarian Universalists have lifted up the need to express our vulnerability. So I ask, though, is expressing our vulnerability always a good? Was it going to be a virtue for Solomon Northup in slavery to express his vulnerability? In other words, is vulnerability an absolute good all the time? Don't get me wrong. I'm not against expressing our vulnerability. In that sermon last year, I noted that without vulnerability, genuine connection is not possible, that vulnerability indeed is the gateway to connecting with other people. I affirmed Brené Brown's assertion that vulnerability is the birthplace of authenticity, accountability, joy, creativity, belonging, love, innovation, inspiration, spirituality, and adaptability. So I stand by what I said in that sermon, but today I want to balance it a little, nuance it a little bit. Being vulnerable with others is not always a good thing. We need to express our vulnerability in the right places, and we also need to develop that small, strong streak of steel within. We need to be aware when exercising our vulnerability muscle is not such a good thing. So I can think of three circumstances in which expressing our vulnerability is not a good thing, necessarily. So the first I've already alluded to, it's when we are in an oppressed position and being vulnerable, actually expressing our vulnerability rather, actually increases the danger. Now, being vulnerable is always a risk. For example, when we're vulnerable with a partner or another family member, we risk their later misusing what we shared against us. But to connect deeply, you have to still be vulnerable anyway. But when we are in a situation of oppression, the risk in expressing our vulnerability just may not be worth it. Now, it's an extreme case, no doubt. But would it really have made sense for Solomon Northup to show his vulnerability to the man who enslaved him? Those among us with privilege need to beware of preaching a gospel of vulnerability to people who don't share the same degree of privilege. I'd add here something that was shared yesterday in the response time, that if we are in a position of privilege, then vulnerability may well be something we want to get more accomplished at showing other people. A second circumstance in which expressing vulnerability is not such a good thing is when our motivation to do so is manipulating other people. So let's say that I majorly screw up at home, which it's possible I did yesterday. Let's say I did that. I think that it's good to admit what I've done, you know, the exact nature of my mistakes. And as I do so, it might be good to share my vulnerability. You know, how did this impact me on the inside? unless in so doing, I'm consciously or unconsciously trying to preempt my partner's anger. I need to avoid expressing my vulnerability if the unspoken message is, see how vulnerable I am now? Don't be a meanie. Let go of this. I've seen folks who use vulnerability to manipulate others. I've been manipulated by others, and if truth be told, I have used my own vulnerability to manipulate others. And then the third circumstance in which expressing vulnerability is not necessarily a good thing is when it is little more than a symptom of self-centeredness and even narcissism. Rather than opening ourselves and giving space to vulnerable sharing from others, instead we just sort of hog the floor. See how vulnerable I am? I'm sharing my deepest feelings, and I think I'll share this deep feeling too, and that deep feeling, and you're never going to get to say anything. That, to me, is not necessarily a good use of vulnerability. So all of this leads me to conclude that we need to express our vulnerability skillfully. And when I use the word skillfully, I'm using it in that Buddhist sense of bringing intention and clarity to how we behave and speak. So here are some good questions to consider as we're thinking about how vulnerable we want to be. Is there a power differential between the person I'm sharing with and me, and am I on the low end? And if so, will this expose me to more danger? And what is my motivation for expressing my vulnerability? Is it to create a genuine connection, or is it to manipulate or keep the focus on me? Returning to Solomon Northup in 12 Years a Slave, to me, his story really shows the complexity of expressing vulnerability. So I've argued that not expressing his vulnerability when he was in slavery made a lot of sense. Let me go on a little bit. If you have not seen this movie, I'm mindful it is still showing in town, and I'm about to spoil the ending. So I'm going to hold up my hand. When I'm done spoiling it, I'll put my hand down. You can plug your ears if you don't want it spoiled. Okay, so Solomon was freed at the end of the movie, and he returned home. The movie does not focus on what happens next. It's just a little brief scene, but it hints at the difficult reintegration he was going to have. And I think, how easy would it have been for him once he was home to express his vulnerability again? This trait he had developed, that steel within, hiding his vulnerability, his soft sense, that served him so well for 12 years. What would happen when he returned? Skillful expression of vulnerability meant walling it off for 12 years, and then it meant tearing down the wall. Not an easy task. Of course, most of us will never find ourselves in that sort of position, but the story lifts up the need for skillful expression of vulnerability. Okay. So how might we skillfully address our vulnerability in several arenas in our life? The first I want to briefly talk about is in a marriage or other life partnership. I think we need to be wary of expressing our vulnerability if, again, there's a power differential, especially if one of us is on the receiving end of any sort of abuse. And we need to share our vulnerability deeply and openly if the relationship is truly mutual. Okay, and that's really difficult to do, isn't it? There's a beautiful quote from Diane Ackerman in her book, A Natural History of Love, that captures how difficult that is, even in a loving, mutual, respectful relationship. After all, she writes, love requires the utmost vulnerability. We equip someone with freshly sharpened knives, we strip naked, and then we invite them to stand close. What could be scarier, she asks. Really good question. That's really scary. But the depth and the power of the relationship will be directly proportional to the extent to which we can truly open ourselves up and share. At the same time, in a marriage or other life partnership, we need to avoid expressing vulnerability as a means of manipulation or hogging all the attention. And how might skillful expression of vulnerability manifest itself in how we raise our children? And here I'm using the word children broadly, not just our biological or adoptive kids, but the kids we mentor as well in the context even of religious community. Child rearing to me is all about teaching and reinforcing impossible and paradoxical balances. Expressing vulnerability is no exception. We need to nurture our kids' own small, strong streak of steel within. And we also need to help them learn how to open and honestly share deeply. We need to help them put up walls around their vulnerability when they need those walls, and to tear them down when they don't. We also need to teach our kids not only to be able to express their vulnerability, but to listen deeply to others who share back. And then, what about the context of a spiritual community like this? How can we here exercise our vulnerability skillfully? The most important thing I think we have to do here is create a safe space for the expression of vulnerability. This is part of why we have our journey groups and other small groups, and why these become ever more important the larger the fellowship grows. I hope that our services remain a safe space for people to share vulnerably. But certainly this is not an intimate setting. When there's 100 or 150 people, you know, it's just not really intimate, right? So deep mutual sharing, vulnerability, is probably better expressed in really small groups. And so if you have not connected with a small group here, I really, really encourage you to do so. It does require an investment of time and energy. I get that, and both those are rare and valuable commodities in our life. But it will deepen the spiritual power of this community for you. And then we also need to continue building and creating safe space for our children in our religious education program, in our youth programming, and also for our young adults in our Lawrence campus ministry, for example. These should be places where we help our young people develop those steel streaks within and also develop the skills to share their vulnerability in a skillful way. Well, I've come up with what I'm calling the vulnerability courage prayer. God, grant me the courage to have a streak of steel when I need it, the courage to express my vulnerability when I need to do that, and the wisdom to know when to do which. May it be so.